Nice to finally meet you here. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Jordan?
I'm well. I say it lately that I'm low on sleep, but high on purpose. We just had a baby girl, and so she's like two weeks and change old. So low on sleep, high on purpose.
Brand new. Oh my God.
Fresh baby.
Wow. Fresh out the oven.
Yeah, totally. So it's been a whirlwind.
Amazing. Congrats.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool.
Let's do the old podcast thing. You know, we're just saying like we've interacted on social media a bunch. You're great. That's why you're here. But I want to learn a little bit more about you, about just, you know, the old how you got into the fitness space, you know, why you're so passionate about all this stuff and just a little bit so the listener can get to know you.
Yeah. It's a bit of a convoluted story, as I'm sure you can imagine, but I'll give you the kind of cliff notes. So my first career was as a science educator. So I spent 12 years in the trenches teaching high school science to kids. So your average teenager, taught chemistry and biology. I majored in biology, human physiology. So I've always been a bit of a science nerd. I was watching the Discovery Channel, the Operation Show when I was, you know, like 11 or 12, just fascinated by the body and how things worked. And I eventually went on to study science and then get certified to teach secondary education. So I spent about 12 years doing that, kind of like concurrently to all that. You know, I've been an athletic person my whole life. I competed in sports when I was a kid. And you know, the through line here is that no one ever taught me about how to eat to fuel your athletic endeavors. And so I learned about food, how most kids growing up in the 90s. So I was born in 79. How most of us kind of did, which was learning it from magazines and commercials and SlimFast and all of these things. So despite being an athletic kid competing in sports and that really carrying on through my 20s and my early 30s, I did not understand what I needed to really adequately fuel my endeavors. Ended up in low energy availability and really struggled. So I went from endurance sports into the weightlifting world and CrossFit. And in about 2012 was like, I don't know, throwing up the white flag here because something's wrong. I don't understand what's missing. And lo and behold, the audience will be like, it wasn't a surprise. She was under eating and really had to take some of that on board. So that kind of influenced me along with finding strength training in 2010 to eventually change my career and go from being a high school educator in science to now working with adults and working with women primarily in things like sports and performance nutrition and strength training. So that's kind of how I ended up here, but I've worked online now full time since 2013. So I will say I am a survivor. I think I've made it. my business has looked different in that time, but yeah, I've been here online teaching, talking about this stuff for longer than a lot of other folks. And I just see the same mistakes perpetuated. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today.
you being a science teacher, it feels like it makes a lot of sense, actually. I think you're, I don't know, I'm going to ask you in a second what the similarities are or what you've learned and what you've taken from that experience. But like you being a more formal educator makes a lot of sense once you get to know you and your content, certainly. What was that like? What did you like about being a teacher? What did you not love? And how has that affected your ability just, or maybe educating style or communication style now that you're not dealing with, you know, snot-nosed 15-year-old kids, but more like snot-nosed 40-year-old people, you know?
Yeah. I think being an educator, I purposely chose toward the tail end of my bachelor's degree to go into secondary education. A lot of my peers were going into research or they were on the pre-med track as a biology major. And although I had entertained that for a while, I had this perception of, I don't know if I want to work in a lab. I saw my uncle who was a doctor be on call all the time. And I just thought, this isn't really for me. So I decided to go that route. Now, in hindsight, I am also an introverted introvert. And working with that, the energy to work with that many kids and personalities and staff every day was very hard. I did have some things about it I really loved. I loved those kind of side conversations that we would have with students. You know, they knew that toward the tail end that I was doing things like weightlifting. So the football players would come in and they're like, how much do you squat, miss? And so you know, we would talk about that. And I felt like that was a great opportunity to, you know, positively influence kids. But the flip side to that was all of the testing and the state standards and the bureaucracy and the red tape of being an educator and working against admin. And it was rough. It was rough. I don't know how people who are in the field still even, you know, navigated things like the pandemic, because wow. It was a lot, you know, but I still think what I do in large part is educating and teaching adults. And of course, there's some coaching in there as well. But at the very heart of it, we have to help adults understand the rationale. Adult learners need to know the why. They need to know the rationale if they're going to make change. And that's really what I do on a daily basis. I think a lot of also what I've done is try to, in my courses and my programs, include things like different learning styles. And that's just part of what comes through from my educational background, how I scaffold information even. So, you know, I'm not going to necessarily teach somebody at a super high level if they're just coming in. However, I am really so sick of how the industry even approaches fitness for women in particular, because that's who I really focus on working with. But the industry teaches us or approaches us like we're so stupid and we can't understand basic concepts. And it really puts things down to, I think it infantilizes the language a lot. It's like, oh, like your fluffy tummy and all these things. And I'm like, we're adults here. Like, can you please speak to us in a way that meets us where we're at and treats us like we're intelligent, because we are. So yeah, there's just a lot of that woven in. And ultimately, I kind of think that what I do is educating in my little corner of the internet now, rather than in a traditional four walls of a classroom.
Sure. I think the infantilizing is definitely there. I don't disagree at all. I almost am slightly one standard deviation more cynical and think it's just about money. And I'm not poo-pooing capitalism or money in general. It's like, cool, making money is not a negative thing. But I just think that there's something about societal expectations on women and a long, long, long history of that, and how much money there is to be made on preying on those insecurities and kind of societal expectations of women. So I just, like, you know, using words like, you know, fix your bloat and cortisol face and whatever's hot right now, of like, that is just like blatantly geared towards women's like fear of having any body fat anywhere at all and fear of their body changing throughout their life, their lifespan. I just think it's more, I just feel like it's not even like that people or the people who are marketing this stuff think that women are stupid. I think that they are preying on real insecurities that have been both formulated and reinforced over many, many decades. And things have changed a little bit. And I guess not to go super depressing over it, I've said this, you know, at some points on the podcast, so I'd love to hear your take though. And maybe it's because we're in our little niche of like, yes, of course, we are trying to get more people to lift weights. We're trying to get more people to like eat a nutritious diet, maybe, you know, not have as much of the disordered eating tendencies and focus on quality of life and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, we are in a niche. And so we are still trying to get people to do that stuff. But on a more positive note, I feel like we're making a little bit of headway. Like, I feel like we're, the two things that I credit that to, and ironically you come from one of them, is CrossFit and obsession with glute gains. And the reason I'm like so high on that is because I think CrossFit got a lot of people, I think CrossFit, you were a victim of the downside of CrossFit, but also so much good in CrossFit. I'm not anti-CrossFit, but there's, you know, there are downsides to it. And some people, you know, take it to the extreme, do too much intensity, you know, or it's just not the thing that they should be doing for the actual goals they have, whatever. But I think CrossFit got a lot of people excited about getting strong, excited about lifting heavy, you know, introduced a lot of barbell lifts, which, you know, we can, you know, who cares about what their level of like optimization for hypertrophy? They are something that comes with it, an air of confidence and lifting heavy and being strong. And then the glute gain era has, again, kind of doubled down on that. It's like really heavy deadlifting, heavy RDLs, heavy hip thrusts, heavy glute bridges, like heavy lunges and building muscle and all this kind of rhetoric that kind of just unravels a little bit of this, like, you know, women need to be tiny little waifs that like blow over with a gust of wind. I feel like we're making a little headway. Do you feel like we're unraveling some of that stuff?
I do. Every time though, I peek my head over the parapet, I'm like, can I swear on this podcast?
Fuck yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck is going on out here? You know? So I think there is for, you know, and I think of stages of change, right? Stages of change have to, they coexist along with things like the current popular messaging, the things that are, we're seeing in society, trends, those sorts of things. So we know that there's sort of this shift back to, you know, we have like Kim Kardashian, you know, style of body ideal. And now things are shifting a little bit back in the opposite direction, which kind of gives you whiplash back to the 90s. You know, so we're kind of like in this soup, this the milieu of what is all this marketing and messaging, and what, how do people make change? And understanding that if we don't even know what the problem is, it's like how are we going to know that there's another solution out there? So I feel like that we exist in this smaller community of people who are trying to be these dissenting voices, I guess, or present other alternatives to what people are hearing. And if we can get those folks into our world slowly, they start to go, oh, okay. Yeah, like there's something to this. But zooming out and seeing our place in the wider fitness industry, for example, is, wow, it's a moment, because you quickly realize we're up against it. And so we, you know, we're just, I think, trying to make some positive change in the smaller groups of people that we come into contact with, relatively speaking. You know, we're not like a Gymshark or something like that. So we're doing what we can. And I hope that things will, that will become enough of a foothold over time to start shifting that narrative. And yeah, that's the work. That's the mission.
On that, do you find this act of like peeking up out of the periscope, you know, and you're like looking around at like what's going on out there? Like, do you find that depressing or motivating? Because I'll tell you right now, my explore page, it cracks me up, because my explore page, it doesn't look like, it's not like I'm just following people like me. I'm actually a lot of times following, like, not following, actually I try not to follow, but on the explore page, for some reason, what is all the rage right now, or whatever. My explore page is a hot fucking mess of stuff that's just like, just a hot steaming pile of cow dung. And so it's like every kid with a cutting board, you know, calling everything poison, you know, all of this stuff that is just nonsensical. And sometimes I get caught in the middle of that. Like, is this depressing? Is this job security for me? Is this, you know, am I fired up by the existence of this stuff? And I will say it is a mix, but I want to hear from you. Do you get that as well, where it's a bit of a mix, or do you lean in one direction of like, we're fighting a real uphill battle here and that's depressing? Or it's like, hey, that helps me pick my pants up every day and like get to work, you know?
I think it's a bit of both. And some of it depends on my own energy levels, my own sort of emotional regulation. And I've had to really learn how to deal with that over the years. It's still not perfect and definitely a work in progress. But if I allow myself to get dragged down by what I see as this this like uphill effort of like rolling the boulder uphill, and then it just rolls back down, and thinking that it's pointless, then it's going to feel pointless. It's going to feel like something that's too hard to overcome. And so, you know, I worked with a coach last year, who's also a therapist, in her other training. And we really focused on things like currency, and not just from, on a business perspective, like currency, somebody's paying you, but what are the positive things that people are saying? How are you positively impacting people's lives? And not taking any of that stuff for granted when it comes across, because that is like the juice that we need to keep going and saying like, yes, you are making a difference. Here's how you're positively impacting people. I think people like you and I want to impact more folks, because we're like, let's take all these people that are sucked in by all of this, you know, predatory marketing and things like that, and kind of bring them back into the fold. And so we see that there's just such a huge number of people that we could help. If we think about it in terms of that, I don't know how people can keep going if they're always focusing on what's not working. So even though our human tendency is to go toward that negativity bias of, you know, there's all this crap out here and things aren't working, and look at all these people who are not on board, I think that's a difficult task. My explore page right now, I'm pretty happy with, because it's a mixture of cat cat reels, jujitsu content, and
nice
strength training.
You're
and,
right.
And not the crappy kind of strength training, but I am human. And what I will do, oftentimes I've got a few friends who I'll take these, you know, take a screenshot of all the shit that I see and post it. We send it to each other just as a reminder almost of why our work is necessary.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That, and I don't, I, and to be honest, like I don't want to go too deep into the content creation side, but I think that there's multiple types of content you can do. And I think that there will be people that you'll do like a reaction post to like something that goes on and you'll like use that as a platform to educate. And some people like, just like, will be, don't tear people down. It's like, you know what? Like there's multiple buckets here of content of like, I'm going to make my own positive, helpful content period. I'm going to reflect on other kind of myths and stuff and other people think things people have said, and I'll use that as a platform to educate. And I think that there's room for all of that. Soft pivot. Let's talk about, and I don't want to put you in the bucket of like, the women over 40 person. That's not, that is like it feels like a passion of yours as far as the demographic is concerned. We can do just women in general. And again, we can extrapolate even just to people in general. But what are some of the pieces of misinformation, myths, most frustrating kind of pseudoscience marketed towards the woman or the woman, women or women over 40 or women as they age? Some of the things that are like on top of mind for you when you're like, yeah, we're fighting this battle as women right now in terms of this, you know, these pieces of misinformation.
Ugh. Yes. The things I think about on a daily.
Yeah.
So I think when it comes to women, for example, in strength training, we have this spectrum of content that ranges from accurate and evidence-based and sensible all the way through to, I mean, it feels like a rehashing of things like infomercials from the 90s. And it's just this wide spectrum, and some of it's helpful and some of it's not. So the things that I'm seeing a lot right now are still this fear of getting bulky, which is like, you know, women, if you lift weights, you're going to get bulky, and bulky is ugly, and bulky is something you don't want to be. So therefore, you know, you should only, if you are going to do anything that resembles strength training, which we can debate exactly what that means, but if you're going to do anything that involves resistance training, it must be for the sole purpose of keeping your muscles long and lean and toned and tiny. And it just drives me fucking wild. I can't stand it. I understand why people say this, because again, what do we repeat as women in general who are like, oh, I'm interested in fitness? We repeat the things that we have been sold and told over and over and over again. And so for me, the blame comes down to not exactly women who repeat this, but the professionals, and I'm using air quotes here, who use this in their marketing. They talk about it in their classes, et cetera, as a way to sell women on their style of, you know, training or their style of group fitness or whatever it happens to be. So the idea that we're going to get these bulky muscles and it's something to be avoided at all costs, especially now that we're in our 40s and 50s, et cetera, and we may be seeing more muscle atrophy if we're sedentary, it's just, it's the wrong messaging, period, but especially at this phase of life when we are in this downward slide towards sarcopenia, if we choose to do nothing about it, is to me just so enraging. So I would say that. The other thing I see
a lot
now.
Can I pause you on the bulky thing?
Can I pause you on
the bulky thing? Because it just brings up, it brings up three like very like competing emotions for me. The first is that the first initial knee jerk is no, you won't, right? And that's like that's a knee jerk that I do believe in, but there is an easy counter argument to that, which is like, I'm not somebody who gets to decide what you think is bulky. And there is a subjective aesthetic that you're allowed to, it's like art. You're the one, you get subjective. You can decide what you want is you, what you think is beautiful and what you would like to, you know, embody and look like. So the first knee jerk is you won't. I mean, it's incredibly difficult to build muscle. It takes a very long time. As a female, you're at a slight disadvantage, just lower testosterone and lower baseline starting muscle mass. So the knee jerk is no, you won't. It's really hard to build muscle. It takes a long time. And you're, as a woman, you're going to build it a little bit slower. Relatively speaking, it's actually the same rate, but because you start with baseline and because we're talking about relative actually doesn't, that sentence actually doesn't help, by the way, because it makes it seem like women build muscle just as fast and they kind of don't. They build it in the same percent relative to starting, which is to say less, whatever. The second is, your counter argument is like, okay, Jordan, but like, I hear you, you're telling me that it's hard to get bulky. It takes a long time, but you can't tell me what I think is beautiful and aesthetic and what I want to look like. And I think that's, I absolutely cannot. What I would say if you're in that position is I'd want you to be curious about how you came up with that and where that came from, of like what you think is beautiful, why you think it is such, and just make sure that is in fact coming from a good place of why you think that. So that would be my counter to that counter. And then the third feeling is that, hey dude, like you can friggin' stop if you feel like you're getting bulky. Like you can, it's not like you wake up one morning and you're like, oh my God, I'm Brock Lesnar with these traps. I don't have ears anymore. Like that doesn't actually happen. So if you actually, all things considered, started lifting, started building more muscle than you'd like, you can stop. You can stop. You could do less. You could lose a little bit of muscle. Like my point is like, you don't just wake up, you know, 3 years beyond where you want it to be in terms of muscle growth. So those are my three thoughts on the bulky thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think there's definitely something under the surface in most cases. And I will say, you know, it is worth a discussion of, yes, if you do build muscle mass, may you have to get bigger size shirts, for example. I used to be a teacher. I used to wear these cute little blouses with these like cap sleeves and tight and I didn't have as much arm muscle. And then lo and behold, start lifting weights, right? Get stronger. I'm building muscle. And those shirts don't fit anymore. And so what happens quite often is people will say, okay, well, I did build muscle and maybe I don't think it's bulky, but I'm still having to wrestle with the idea that I got bigger. And society is telling me that bigger is not okay for a woman to be in this case. So how do I deal with that? You know, everything is going great. I'm feeling awesome, et cetera. But then I had to go buy bigger clothes. And all my life, I've been conditioned to believe that bigger clothes means something really bad about me or about what that represents. And so it is messy. And I love that you brought that up because it's not always a simple answer. But again, kind of asking and getting curious about, well, like, why is that a bad thing? Or what does that mean to you? And, you know, some things just are factually incorrect. Like we're going to actually be able to lengthen your muscles. And so, again, I just wish that the way things are marketed were more honest, because that continues to perpetuate the cycle.
Yeah. The muscle fiber grows and muscle fiber shrinks. And you can, if you really wanted to get in the weeds, we could talk about like, you know, regional hypertrophy and all this stuff. But like at the end of the day, man, like your muscles grow and they shrink, and what they look like when they grow is down to genetics, insertion, origin points, stuff like that, like what you end up working more. And I just feel like, that is the idea that you can lengthen, lean, tone, shred, like none of those things. I'm not somebody who gets bothered when someone says the word tone, because what bothers me about the word tone is not that I think it, like people are always like, people know what that means. Like, don't get all worked up about it. Like they know what it means. It's like, yeah, but I just feel like the person using it is using it on purpose. And, you know, some people might know that this just really means like build muscle and lose fat, but not everyone knows. And actually, I personally would come back with, I don't think most people really understand. I think most people that view that as like a more, friendly word and the opposite of being bulky. And at the end of the day, your muscles grow and your muscles shrink. And if you want to tone, it's some combination of more muscle and less fat. And you can choose to do that in a way that happens faster, which is by lifting weights. You can do that by things that make it go slower, which like jumpy, jumpy, bouncy, bouncy is what I would call it. You know, like you could do it in a better way and you could do it in a slower way. Like those are really your options. There's no way to do it in a different way. There's no like, I'm going to build that dense muscle or that lean muscle or that long muscle. So I'm with you on that. I just want to make that point.
Yeah, totally
yeah,
agree.
Yeah. So that's on the bulky side. We were moving on to some of the other things. I don't know if you had another one that you wanted to talk about.
I did. It's this idea that, especially when we are getting older, that any kind of intensity in training, whether it's strength training and or cardiovascular training, is going to just whack out our cortisol and be super damaging for our body. And so as a result, we should just always, across the board, no context, just take it easy, go easy all the time. Like, we're going to hurt, hurt ourselves.
Unless you're Stacey Sims, in which you think that the only thing women should do ever is high intensity stuff. But yeah.
Well, yeah. And it's again, it's kind of these two polar opposites or polar extremes that we see, which is, you know, go smash the crap out of yourself all the time, or just take it, you know, we should only ever take it easy. And not, again, contextually that, hey, if somebody is right now coming out of a period of being really overtrained, they may have to look at reducing their intensity, you know, look at your nutrition and your recovery practices. But it's this idea that, like, carte blanche across the board, any kind of intensity is bad for women, especially women who are over 40 or who are aging.
Do you feel like there's actually any advice on the intensity spectrum towards women or women as they age that actually makes any sense? Like, I actually think there is no, there's no unique suggestion for this population when it comes to intensity. I think the same rules apply. You're just like, listen, the six times a week Orange Theory person who's feeling like super run down, injured, and, you know, irritable, tired, fatigued, on 400 plus milligrams of caffeine a day, doesn't sleep well. Like, yes, don't do more in high intensity. You probably benefit from less. But I actually don't think there is a demographic based suggestion here. That breaks the rules that other people would have to follow, which is like, you have an amount you can recover from. All of the intensity duration relationships are beneficial in their own way. Everything from sprinting to walking, everything in between, everything from lifting really, really heavy to lifting, you know, on the lighter side for more reps. It's all helpful. It all goes into the same bucket of fatigue management. And I just don't even see, it's interesting where as you were saying the cortisol thing, I was like nodding along. Where did that come from? Like what sort of mistake, mechanistic mistake or extrapolation of a study or something that's actually happening in the female body did brought about this idea of like, oh, we need to be afraid of high intensity because of cortisol.
I don't know where this thought virus came from, but one thing I do think is true as we are kind of transitioning into this life phase, I guess I will say, is that the amount of stress that we are under outside of physical stress can really ramp up pretty fast. So I know you just had a child. There are some people in their 40s who are more newly parenting, but I'm thinking about things like caretaking for a sick spouse or family member, financial stress, job career changes or job stress, just this overall anxiety about my body is changing. Obviously, we're adding in things like perimenopause, not sleeping potentially. So I think that that does kind of add all kind of get thrown onto the fire. But in terms of the actual recovery, you know, like we're talking about training here, I think that the thought that has been carried out is this idea that, well, exercise, particularly more intense exercise, raises cortisol. And then so anytime cortisol goes up, this is a really bad thing, where, again, this is lacking the context or the nuance or just understanding the mechanism of what's happening here. And it's like, exercise is not a bad thing. Again, and you were talking about, yeah, of course, we're going to talk about fatigue management and recovery and nutrition. If we are doing too much, we're doing all this in the context of barely eating, we're not really sleeping, our recovery is all over the place, then things are probably not going to end up super well for us if we keep this up over a longer period of time. But again, social media or some of these ideas that are out there, just they're so simplistic. And they get, because they are simplistic, they get passed around. They become these little one-liners, you know, women shouldn't do any hard exercise. We also have this idea that we should be cycle syncing and doing something different every week of our cycle. And I really, you know, I was talking to Alyssa about this. Yes, in the case of somebody who does tend to overtrain or push things too hard, the concept of taking a chill pill, you know, like for part of the month could help them feel better, because overall they're just managing their fatigue better. But we don't have strong evidence currently to suggest that we should be training across the board, like universal exercise recommendations based on the menstrual cycle. And it kind of does my head in when I'm seeing things like Yeah, we should only go hard one or only do intense things 1 week a month. And everybody should be training in four different styles 4 weeks out of the month. It's like, please stop overcomplicating this. And of course, there is a time to go easier. There is a time to go harder. A lot of it, this is, I think, if we can learn autoregulation a little bit better, will definitely help. And the idea that you always can adjust your intensity if you're feeling like crispy around the edges, especially. But this idea that you should never load up a heavy weight, right? Or you should never try for max reps or something right before, you're in your late luteal phase, you're going to cause some harm and damage. This is not empowering people to really understand their own bodies and to be able to use autoregulation and to actually get some consistency, because you and I know, working with people in the real world, because that's what we do, that consistency or lack thereof is one of the biggest barriers to people engaging in health promoting habits like exercise in the first place. So how are we going to make it? How are we going to help people with consistency if we're like, by the way, you need to completely change your exercise routine next week, have fun. It's the more barriers we put in place, the harder it gets for people. We're not actually helping.
I find that as you were transitioning from us talking about the cortisol stuff into the cycle syncing, I actually feel that there's a lot of overlap in kind of how these things come about, and it is an extrapolation on anecdote. And so, like, you'll have somebody who, like I said, you'll have somebody who has a few clients in a row that come to them saying, "Oh, I'm doing 6 times a week Orange Theory, I'm doing Peloton 12 times a week," and they reduce the overall intensity, basically the overall stress on that person on average over time, and they feel a lot better. And that happens like a few times, and all of a sudden it becomes this coach person's identity to say that all women are doing this. And I think it's just, listen, the idea that you could be doing too much high intensity work, totally a thing, but it should be marketed as, hey, if you're doing a lot of high intensity, you might be a person who might benefit, and you have XYZ symptoms, maybe you benefit from, doing a little less high intensity, whatever. And same with the cycle syncing, where it's like, hey, if you are a person who periodically during this phase of your cycle feels lower energy, more hungry, you have worse sleep, you're more irritable, whatever things can happen. Yes, maybe there's room for you to modify your training around those symptoms. But it becomes something where you're just like putting everybody in the same box. And you said auto-regulate. I love that. I think I have real issues with some of my issues in the space here are like, setting up fat loss phases and reverse dieting and doing all these things that are lack your ability to actually take your experience as its own, and kind of take something that actually doesn't apply to everyone and just try and apply it to everyone. And I think that that's what happens here. We have people that are doing too much high intensity that would benefit from less. But if you're making content about that and you're saying that this is something that all women should do, no, that's not true. Cycle syncing. The counter argument is always, but it's working for me, right? It's like, hey, I'm doing this and I'm feeling better. It's like, that's great. But like, you should be, instead of thinking, oh, I'm in my late luteal, I got to do this. It's like, during these parts, I feel this way and I should cater to that feeling or not, And the word that comes to mind for me is autonomy. It's just like taking away the ability for you to be like, oh, I'm feeling this way. What should I do about it based on, working with somebody potentially. But yeah, I hate the idea of taking like a general thing and applying it to everybody. In this context, it's very much cycle syncing. Yeah, or let's just, I fucking hate that term, by the way, and I'm sure you do too. But like the idea that you would modify training based on symptoms of menstrual cycle as a general understanding that you might bring to a discussion with a client one-on-one to see how you can work through what they're doing to get the best results. Like, I'm all about that. I'm sure, dude, if I have a client, it's like, hey, every single time during this phase, I feel this way, and it's recurring, and it's something that's like on a habitual basis every month or whatever. Dude, like, of course we should talk about that and see if there's something we can do. Like, I have no problem with that. It's about people just taking that out of, yeah, that's what happens on social media. We don't need to get on the soapbox here, but that's what happens on social media. It's like somebody had like 3 clients who were like, yep, during this part of their phase, they were a little less strong. And so we deload every 4th week. It's like, okay, like for those people, maybe that was a good thing, but you can't extrapolate that to everybody now.
Yeah, it's well, the opposite would be kind of silly, right? For example, let's say people generally feel less symptomatic in the follicular phase of their cycle, maybe, ovulation not included, because some people can get a little bit symptomatic there. But this is the time of, you know, the when people are preaching cycle syncing that, hey, we should go hard. Like, this is the time. The fire is burning. Like, go to your high intensity. Go to your smash all your heavy sets. What if that person shows up to the gym and they didn't sleep well? They feel super low energy. Are we going to force the idea that, hey, this is the time. You should really go ahead. And, you know, this is the time to lift heavy and push the opposite. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And from cycle to cycle, people can have a lot of variation. So
Can I just pause you on that? Like what you just said is like cycle to cycle, people can have a lot of variation. You know, do you know how many inputs there are that go into how you feel on a daily basis? Like this can be a powerful one, right? This can be a powerful independent variable that affects how you feel. But like, oh my God, there are so many variables that affect how you feel that if you choose to act based on any one of those single variables, you'll miss out on what actually matters, which is the aggregate of all of them, which is your experience about how you're actually feeling in that moment. It's like people are like, yeah, I'm in my follicular phase, fire's burning, I gotta hit this high intensity. It's like, yeah, but like you said, you're like, I didn't eat a lot yesterday, I'm low on carbs, haven't been hydrated, didn't sleep, got in a fight with my spouse. It's like, yeah. So the aggregate of all of these things means you probably don't feel great. And I'd rather you act on that than this one single variable.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's why people will say, well, I see these, you know, the graph, it's the circle graph with the 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Every time I see these things on social media, it makes me wild. And people will say, well, you just learn how to do these 4 different weeks and then repeat it month over month. And again, that takes out the personal experience, that takes out the, hey, this month I felt great. You know, I didn't feel as symptomatic as I normally do. Or, hey, actually, you know, like you said, it was this earlier point in the month. Like, I just really, you know, stress was super high. Work was really nuts, blah, blah, blah. Like, so we have to give people the chance to add that in. And I get it. I understand why things like this persist, because our brains, like simplification, it seems a lot easier, at least on the surface, to put things into nice, neat little boxes and not have to think about it, because people are already overworked, overstressed, too much going on. Our brains are full of information. We're listening to thousands of pieces of information a day or taking those in. And so the people who are really here for context, nuance, like let's consider, you know, more of this middle ground, our content ends up being the things that people are like, oh, well, that's not clearly a yes or a no. It's not very binary. And that's because that's what happens in real life, how we know people can better move to things like behavior change, habit change. But it's not super black and white. So we get it. Like, why do people love really strict diet rules? Because our brains love to simplify and put things in nice, neat little boxes. But we know long-term that stuff tends to not work out super well for people when they hit this kind of fork in the road where the answers aren't quite clear. And so it's like, well, what's another option in the middle? So I understand it. And at the same time, I keep trying to get people to think a little bit more as they go along.
Yeah. You're not good at social media, are you? You know, too much.
No,
too much.
I'm never
going
to be super popular.
Too much. I mean, you're very popular. You kill it. You do fantastic. Yeah. The lack of nuance, lack of context, like, you know, yada yada. People have just heard this a million. People who listen to this podcast just aren't in that box. You know, for the most part, of course, like you're listening to this podcast because you're interested in where optimal meets practical. You know, and doing something that is a bit more nuanced and contextual. So I feel you on that. Could you, I think we'd be remiss and we should have done this earlier, just, and I almost like, I wrote down this question. I was like, maybe we don't even do this, but could you steel man the cycle syncing argument for us and just like say, this is what they're saying, just to give people who have been listening to the last 10 minutes being like, okay, but like, I get the general idea of cycle syncing, but what might be what they would say more specifically?
Yeah. So people that are really into teaching people cycle syncing will say, okay, your menstrual cycle is roughly divided into 4 phases, right? So 4 weeks. These are the things that you should be doing for exercise based on what day of the month you are in. So for example, during the follicular phase, generally speaking, you're quote unquote stronger. You tend to have more energy based on where your hormones are shifting. So for that reason, this is the time of the month where you should lift heavy. or you should lift heavier weights or do more challenging intensity. And then in the second half of the cycle, based on where you're at, based on your hormonal fluctuation, for example, rising progesterone, because of these things, because you might be more tired, more fatigued, have more PMS, everybody should do gentle exercise. Only do walking, never do stretching here, only do stretching there. Like there's, it just gets so, you're like, I don't even understand this prescription. This, there's so many different things that should, here I should do intensity, here I shouldn't do intensity. And so every, that's the idea, is that every month we, you know, in each week, we should be doing four different kinds of exercise in terms of focus, because our hormones are shifting.
I went on I've heard so many iterations of this, by the way, which actually is like kind of a problem too, that it's not, there's like, even, I mean, just even if there was like super agreed upon stuff, it'd still be kind of nonsensical, but I'm just like cracking up the images that are coming up. It's like follicular phase. And then like a bunch of things that are listed that like just totally aren't actually the same. It's like follicular phase, vinyasa yoga, biking, dancing, hiking. Those are none of, like, you could be biking. What am I biking? What if it was super high intensity biking? Like, what are you talking about? Then ovulation, HIIT, cycling. How is cycling different from biking? Then it says cardio yoga and orgasm. Like, what is going on? Then the next one in luteal phase is Pilates, bar, strength training, power yoga. Those are not all the same thing at all. Like, people just like, oh my God, I'm dying over here, man.
I'm melting into my seat right now.
100%, 100%, 100%,
100%. Yeah, it gets really inconsistent. And like you said, it's, how do we define these things? Generally, I think people who are advocates of this would say, you know, you do most of your high intensity in your follicular phase or around ovulation, you do all lower intensity in the second half of the month. I'm sorry, but if we're only lifting weights 2 weeks out of the month, or even 1 week out of the month, it's going to be really hard to have consistency. It's going to be really hard to have progression. It's going to be much harder to see results towards strength or muscle gain or whatever it is we're working on if we're only lifting 1 week a month. I mean, what's that, three sessions, four sessions maybe? It just, like, make it make sense. We can't progress well if we're barely ever doing these things. And so again, I think it's fine. Do something recreationally that feels good for you. For example, if you're late luteal and you're like, wow, my energy is super low, or I tend to get this more as women go through perimenopause and their cycles are more inconsistent. Sometimes they go from months between having a menstrual cycle. And once you hit that 12 months, no menstrual cycle, you're technically in menopause. So they might not always know where, you know, in a regular 4 week cycle they're at, but they're like, wow, I just have no energy today. Great. Can we knock back the load and still meet a relatively decent RPE? Or maybe today is a day, instead of going for a run, you go for a walk. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of ways you can kind of slide it up and down the scale in terms of intensity without taking that person out of the game entirely. Or like we said, if you in your follicular phase don't have the energy, you shouldn't be necessarily forcing yourself to go in. Your body's like, not today. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to load up this bar and try to do a one rep max or something. I mean, fingers crossed, nothing happens, but it's probably not the best day for you to really push it if you're super, like, things aren't aligning. And I think that that's where you and I are coming from here, is that you have the permission to adjust your training or feather the brake or push on the gas at any time, any day, et cetera. Yes, structure is helpful and important, but also we need both. And I love how you said optimization or optimal meets practical. I think that's what we're trying to get at with people. It's like, yeah, you need a strategy, you need a plan roughly, but you're going to have to adjust it, especially if you want fitness to be part of your life. You want to engage in this stuff long-term. It's never going to be perfect. You just kind of have to learn how to go with the flow a little bit more.
No pun intended.
No, definitely. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I think that there's it is a bit of a double-edged sword when it comes to learning about this stuff, because I don't think you and I would sit here and say, hey, if you're a woman, learning about what's happening to your hormones over the cycle and what might be some of the things that on average, maybe with some fluidity and flexibility, you might want to look out. Like, I don't think it's a bad idea. Actually, I think it's a great idea. I think you should learn. I think you should know. But you should be taking that information, applying it to the individual and yourself. Wonderful. Let's talk about people making their own programs. Something you and I have talked about, like, you've said that that's something that's come up in your maybe comment section or just your interaction with people on social media or in real life about, you know, the likelihood of better outcomes by outsourcing that to a professional. And so could you speak to the importance of, or, you know, maybe why the average person not shouldn't make their own program, or you might phrase it that way, but like, it's just probably better off not doing that themselves.
Yeah.
Deep breath.
I again, I very much understand why people want to make their own training plans, and it can be for various reasons. A, you're a very capable, intelligent, go-getter kind of personality as it is, and you're like, what's this? What's like this one more thing that I can do this? I've learned, I've listened to a lot of podcasts. I listen to Jordan's podcast. I listen to Steph's podcast. Like, of course I can, I'm capable. I could totally make my own training plan. I'm super high achieving. I am very good at things. Like, let me just do this other thing. So I see people that are a little bit more along those lines, or they have the curse of knowledge where they've trained for potentially quite a long time. They're not necessarily, again, professionals in the field. And I do know a lot of professionals in the field who outsource their own training anyway, because it's just one more thing they don't have to think about. But ultimately, people who tend to be like, they have the curse of knowledge, they just like know a little bit too much. Life still gets lifey. And when you have to make your own training plan and like have the foresight to see into a little bit further ahead into the future to at least have some semblance of a plan, sometimes it's the first thing to go when shit hits the fan. Or you just kind of get lost in the weeds of really being able to objectively see your own progress, your own weaknesses, right? Your own gaps. So I do think that it seems easy, because sometimes you'll get a training plan and you're like, this is all this is. The famous last words, right? You're like, wow, that doesn't seem so hard. And then you do it and you're like, okay, this is actually pretty hard. But sometimes the simplicity of a well-created, whether it's a gym that does group coaching and they've got a long-term plan, you know, they're planning 3 months out or 6 months out, or you're working with a coach or getting a good templated plan, like you see it and you're like, this doesn't seem like that complicated. But in the simplicity, we know, I used to watch a lot of cooking shows. I still do, but you see these really simple dishes. The simplest dishes are the hardest to execute well. So with simplicity, it doesn't necessarily mean it's easy. I think the other person that I tend to see struggle with this when it comes to writing their own program or creating their own program is the person that's just not getting good results over time, or they're like, this doesn't work for me. Progressive overload doesn't work. Or, you know, I can't figure out why I keep having the same recurring injuries, or it worked for a while and now I'm not seeing great progress. I'm not seeing great continued movement. So maybe at first they did get some decent results, right? They did, you know, there's beginner gains, there's novice gains, which we all wish we could go back and have those, but at some point that's going to wear off. Now the person's not getting super great results anymore. And they're like, yeah, but I'm like, it's just familiar to me to make up my own stuff. One time I had somebody tell me that she was doing Bulgarian split squats 5 days a week. And I was like, why are you doing that? And she's like, I don't know. I just heard that they were really hard. So that's kind of an extreme example, but of doing, you know, at some point you get kind of lost in the sauce, you get lost in the weeds, and taking that extra burden off of yourself to write your own program, I just see for people means you free up a lot of mental space, because you open your program, or you go to, maybe this is going to a class, that's totally fine. As long as, I'll put the caveat here, like if you have goals to do something like build strength or add muscle, that the gym or facility that you're going to has some long-term programming in mind, like random stuff is probably not going to get you there. But when things get busy, having a plan, you can just open up, you can focus on executing the plan, is just taking one extra thing off of your plate so you don't have to put forth the mental energy. And as I mentioned, my people tend to be very busy. Things pop up all the time. It's like playing whammy, you know, you're like, when is the thing going to pop up and get in my way? And so the more you can outsource that, I think just the better. I don't know many people who are like, oh, my car's making a funny noise, let me get on YouTube and try to figure out what it is. and then figure out how to fix it. And you're going to take it to a professional. Like, most people are going to do that. You have a major plumbing problem. Like, there is water spewing from a pipe. You're probably not going to get on YouTube and go, I think I should figure out how to fix my own plumbing now. Like, you're going to outsource that to somebody who knows how to get you a better result. So I love the idea that we've democratized a lot of information. We try to educate people and help them feel like empowered or to be able to understand what's going on. But it still doesn't mean that you're going to get the best results going forward if you're doing this all by yourself. I also tend to see people who start off and, you know, when it comes to beginners, I'm like, I could kind of go either way. Like, I want people to just get moving. This tends to not be my audience. So I tend to work with people that have some strength training experience prior. But when it comes to beginners, you know, we see, at least I see, one of the most common problems is overdoing it with volume. We're like, hey, it's just body weight. I'll do, you know, sets of 50 squats, body weight. And then the next day you can't sit down, and then you can't sit down for a week. And you're like, what happened? So again, we kind of have these things that pop up where people are like, weights are scary, or I don't know how to do this yet, so I'm going to do all body weight. And that's okay until you actually give yourself DOMS, and then you don't want to do it again. So yeah. I don't know what your thoughts are
This topic. Fantastic. Fantastic rant. A couple things that came to mind for me was, one is like, with this being like such a thing that's becoming more of a thing, which is like even personal trainers and group programs and one-on-one coaching, it's all becoming more and more normalized. The competition has driven the quality up and the price down. Like, listen, there are a ton of shit programs that are like just dog shit cookie cutter, like not meeting you where you're at, not even the slightest bit of marketing towards a specific niche. They're just like, everybody can do this program. Totally a bunch of dog shit stuff out there. But I actually don't think you have to seek that far, look that far to find like lower cost quality option. I think on average, quality is going up, but maybe that's my bias of like the circle that I run in. I look at like people who do what I do and my like 10 competitors, and I'm like, I'll hold my hand up. I think we do it better than anyone else. But if you join any of these groups, you are in good hands. And I think there's a lot of those options, but maybe that's my bias of I'm not acknowledging how much dog shit there is out there, but that's number one. And I think that there's still a little bit of bias around things, fitness and nutrition, being something that people have some sort of low-level feeling that they should know how to do, and they don't necessarily view a fitness professional or nutrition professional like they would another professional. I don't mean to be a martyr about it, but like I see it with my parents, I see it with my wife's parents, where it's like the money that they'd have to spend on this stuff feels like not worth it. But, you know, just as soon would spend it on, like you said, like your garage door is broken, you have the guy come and fix it. Your kitchen's broken, you have someone come and look at it. Like, okay, your shit's broken. Like, have somebody come and help you, you know? So there is still a tiny stigma. I think our generation and below is certainly more normalizing spending money on, we'll call it like preventative health through fitness and nutrition. But I definitely see that like resistance from, and I'm super generalizing here, but just like an older generation of like, that's, you know, I charge like $500 a month for one-on-one coaching. And my mother-in-law is just like, wow, that's a lot. And I'm like, well, maybe it is. But first of all, I offer a lot and whatever. This isn't a fucking sales pitch. My point is that knee jerk of like, oh, I would never spend that much on this. It's like, well, maybe, you know, we should recalibrate what you feel is worth it when it comes to a fitness professional, nutrition professional, whatever. I just think that we're still breaking that barrier a little bit. I think nutrition is even worse. We're like, just because we all eat, it feels like something we all should know how to do and have an opinion on and all of that stuff. And so it's something trickling down from there, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree on the nutrition piece. And exactly what I was going to say is that we all eat. So it doesn't seem like something that there comes skill and education in terms of doing things well. And even, you know, down to things like once you know, how do you implement? And I think the implementation piece, and this is where information and implementation are potentially, you know, two very different things. So if you need help with the implementation, because you know all the things, but you're having a hard time putting it into practice, this is where coaching to some degree or a program to some degree can really be useful. in getting you going. And I think that's the disconnect, because we have been, again, our industry tends to sell people on the quick burn cycle, you know, get you in, get you out. Oh, you got a quick result in, you know, 8 weeks or 12 weeks and like, boom, here you are. But then you can't maintain that because it's too aggressive or it's too restrictive or whatever. But they don't, there's like, okay, next body, bring in the next body. You know, and we keep recycling people through over and over again, these same quick boom and bust cycles, I think in the nutrition and fitness space. You know, we see everybody loves the before and after photo, but it's like, what does that person look like in a year? I don't know. Like nobody knows, because all that matters is, do they look better in that 8 weeks or 12 weeks? And so I think we haven't, again, I don't think we've been brought up with the idea that this is kind of a long-term thing, you know, getting in shape. Well, congrats, you did it for 3 months, but where are you going to be in 10 years? Do you want to continue to feel the benefit of having strength as you're in your next decade? Or what does that mean to you? And I don't think we collectively as the industry has done a great job educating people about that or presenting those options. So I think people like ourselves are kind of up against it in that way. But I do think it's a bit of a, even if you think about before the pandemic, I mean, there weren't as many people doing online fitness options or app-based fitness options. I think that's increased quite a bit, although it's not a great fit for everybody either. I think there's some people it's like, just, you know, go to a place. They need that piece. And so some people will try even things like a virtual program and they're like, it's just not my thing. So I love that there's choice. I think that's great. And at the end of the day, I just want people to think about their, like, the long term and what's going to help them to be the most successful in the long term. Cause our brains love that short term. We're like, woohoo, like I got all the dopamine. Yay. it's that quick cycle, that quick result, that sort of thing. But you and I know that, you know, even when we're talking about building a decent amount of muscle mass, this isn't going to be a 6 week thing. This isn't going to be a 4 week boot camp kind of thing. This is going to be a longer term thing. So how do we help people stay in it for the long term?
Yeah, I love that. We're going to end on that note, that sentiment there. Do the outro podcast thing where you tell people where they can find you.
So you can find me at stephgaudreau.com. Most active on Instagram, Steph_Gaudreau, or my podcast, Fuel Your Strength.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Super fun. Thanks. Looking forward to connecting on social media a bit more.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steph.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.